welcome to a Football Friday here on The Whole Show, powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Thanks for being with us. Joining me to start this thing off, I believe Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins, Colorado, on the road, leaving the blue, and maybe feeling a little blue. I think a lot of Rams fans feel that way. Kevin, my friend, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brady. How are you today?
You know, I didn't think Colorado State would win that game, Kevin. I really didn't. But I got to tell you, man, one of my keys to the game was punting, believe it or not, was changing the field. And I think it's safe to say Boise State kind of won that battle.
Yeah, they changed the field a little bit. You could say that. Just baffling, honestly. It's, you know, we're, what, 12-plus hours later, 15 hours later, and it's still kind of hard to wrap your head around exactly how bad that was.
Two blocked punts, a blocked field goal, all taken to the end zone. There's a lot to unpack here. But first and foremost, I don't care if it, I want to get into this. Steve Addazio, as the, also the special teams guy, who's John Goodman in this scenario. But Avery Williams has a history of being a fantastic special teams player. Okay, one time he goes untouched, that's crazy. Second time he goes untouched, what are we doing out there?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, and you're spot on with Avery Williams. You know, Broncos fans, if you remember David Bruton, guy who kind of did everything, yeah, a special team star, Avery Williams is kind of that guy. You know, I think he's not really a great defensive back, but I think he'll probably make a long living in the NFL because of his special teams. But still, I know that, you know that, any random Joe who's watched Boise State more than twice knows that. So it's not like that's a secret. So you would think they would be ready for him. And, you know, Steve Addazio kind of, and he took the blame. He said it's his fault. He, you know, he leads that unit. But they also, you know, basically said, well, guys missed some calls, and that's what happens. Like, well, great, but why did that happen? I mean, Boise State obviously did some things that CSU just didn't handle. And three block kicks is crazy enough. And then to have them all be touchdowns, return for touchdowns. You know, we haven't even touched on Boise State almost returned a punt for a touchdown with a trick play. They ended up fumbling at the end of it, so it ended in a pseudo-positive play for CSU, but, you know, special teams, you know, it almost looked even worse than it did.
Yeah, Kevin, the big story to start was obviously Hank Bachmeier. We're announcing that he's going to go, but we didn't see him for a very long time into the game and really throughout the game because of, all, like you said, as soon as the punt return for touchdown and then we go back and it's a punt and it's almost another touchdown, we barely saw Boise State's star quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. It was crazy. CSU had three and outs before Boise State's offense touched the ball. Because CSU went three and out, had the punt block for touchdown, three and out, the punt that, like I said, Boise State almost returned for a touchdown but fumbled at the end of it, so CSU got the ball again, went three and out again, punted away, and then Boise State's first drive, they went for a touchdown. So at that point, it's only, quote-unquote, 14-0, but honestly, that felt like game over already. I mean, just being in the stadium, you know, with everything that happened, you know, it was only 5 minutes into the game, basically. But with how it had happened, you're sitting there going, oh, boy, I think this one's done. And sure enough, 14-0, you know, was kind of the best part of the game. It just got worse from there for CSU.
Yeah, no question about it. Okay, Kevin, what is the status then? So Steve Addazio, is he actually the special teams coach then?
Yeah, so a lot of people, I think, went into the CSU coaching roster during the game last night, and you see no one has special teams next to their name, which is obviously weird because that's, you know, coaches love talking three phases of the game. You would think that one of them would have a coach for it. But no, it's Steve Addazio. You know, he said he's done that for a long time. You know, he says, I'm really good at special teams. I've had lots of success with it. I run that group. And honestly, we're now kind of having a conversation we had with Mike Bobo. You know, how often did we talk about, okay, Mike Bobo is a great offensive mind, great play caller, but can you do both? Now it's kind of the same thing. You know, special teams is a little different than play calling. It's maybe not as involved during the game, but still, you know, head coach. He likes to be involved in everything. Steve Adazio has talked a lot about how he, practice, he'll bounce around group to group to group, and, he wants his hands in all of it. So you do kind of wonder, well, how much time
put up. Well, I think we maybe lost Kevin Lytle there. Yeah, he's right. John Goodman, at least according to CSURams.com, is listed as special teams quality control. I don't know what that is. I would imagine that's some kind of a coaching position. Okay, we got Kevin back. Kevin, lost you a little bit there. I just think it's interesting, and I'm asking you, John Goodman is listed, and not that John Goodman, John Goodman is listed as a special teams quality control. And you got a few, you see that with a lot of teams. There's quality control. There's people just trying to get cute with it. But what exactly is John Goodman's role with Colorado State football?
Yeah, so he's basically one of your graduate assistant types. He's not one of the 10 full-time assistant coaches. So obviously he plays a role in that and is helping coach that. But, there are GAs basically for every group.
Right.
And obviously they help with a lot of things. Help break down film, help do some personnel stuff. But they're not the guy leading it. Basically, if it's not one of your 10, full assistants, Each NCAA team can have 10 full assistants. If it's not one of those, then basically it's not their role. Yeah, they play a part in it, but it's not theirs to completely handle. So yeah, Goodman's part of it, but Dazio pretty clearly said that, this is all me. This is my job. And obviously it went pretty sideways.
Yeah, on one hand, you hear a coach at the beginning of the season say, hey, I'm good at special teams, I value special teams, so I'm taking it personally, I'm going to be coaching it. Some people could say, okay, well, he's not just sloughing it off, he's really caring about it. But on the other side, as you said, it's a head coach. We're seeing that with the Broncos, with Vic Fangio. Maybe there's too much. A guy can't call a timeout because he's too concerned about what defensive play to call. In this case, you missed obvious, and again, if they're missing reads or they're missing signals at the line, okay. But Avery Williams, I mean, if he blocks it once, next time around, if I don't have a body on that guy, something bad's happening there. So, I think maybe it's a case of just way too much going on for Coach.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot. It's really, head coaching's really difficult. There's so many things that go into it, so it's a hard thing to do. I think it's kind of ironic, I guess we'll say, what you were saying about people saying, okay, well, maybe it's good that he's so invested in the special teams. I think that makes sense because CSU was so bad at special teams under Mike Bobo that I think the general idea of a coach being really intent on how important they are, that's good. Like, I love that Steve Adazio puts so much stake in them. But again, it's just troublesome when you have, issues like this. Like I say, it'd be one thing, a missed field goal or a blocked punt. Those happen. That's kind of part of football. But with as bad as it was, that was an eyebrow raiser.
Yeah, no question. Kevin Lytle joining us from the Fort Collins, Colorado. And again, you're getting some fans saying, well, you take away all those bad special teams plays, and maybe this is a closer game. Who knows? But, I mean, to be real honest, Kevin, we didn't get a CEO on that punt if it wasn't blocked. Boise State's probably receiving it on pretty good field position, and then Hank Bachmeyer goes down. So I have a hard time with that, because, again, I think you noted it in the Colorado one. CSU's defense allowed 7 of 9 third down conversions in the first half. So it wasn't exactly like everything else was a well-oiled machine for the Rams.
Yeah, I mean, it is very weird to look at the stat sheet and see CSU, had more plays, had more total offensive yards. But it's hard to really put too much stake in that because how different would Boise have called the game if it had been going differently? I mean, basically, as soon as before halftime, they basically knew it was in the bag and could be somewhat conservative and just make sure you don't make mistakes. So I think it's hard to say, if you don't have those kicks blocked, you're in good shape. Well, you did have the kicks blocked, so if those didn't happen, because they did.
Yeah, no, it's hard to come back on that and say anything like that. And again, we don't know what that offense really would have looked like. Rough one overall. All right, Kevin, let's get back to this because we're going to have fun with this all year. Patrick O'Brien wasn't really the issue. It wasn't like he was having a monster game, but You put Todd Senteo in late, and obviously he's running. You know, he has some nice runs there, but is there any reason to believe we're going to have another quarterback somewhat controversy here leading up to UNLV?
Yeah, I mean, you have to wonder just the way these decisions have gone. I still think it should be Patrick O'Brien just because of the way the roster is built. Todd Senteo, like you said, it had a couple bright moments. That first drive was a really good drive to start the third quarter, but after that, it didn't really work. They had, Adazio said post-game that they had wanted to get Senteo in for a drive in the first half, but flow of the game, it didn't work out. And that's what makes sense to me. Throw him in for a drive here and there, but not do this switching, for a kind of a full half or full quarter back and forth. So I think he'll probably be O'Brien, but clearly that's sort of an uncertain situation right now.
Yeah, another weird issue there. And again, we're talking a week ago, and Steve Adazio's the hero. This Rams team's getting back on track. They beat a rival. Well, when you lose like this, I mean, I don't know a lot of people that picked CSU to beat Boise State, but when you lose like this, special teams, obviously, then quarterback questions, you get Rams really, really concerned for the rest of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way it escalated, I don't think many of us have seen a game escalate that quickly. And then, like you say, just the bigger picture, there are some decisions, I guess, that were kind of concerning for CSU fans, obviously, the special teams issues. And then, even further, in the second half, CSU scores two quick touchdowns, cuts it to a 3-touchdown deficit. So it's not like they were, about to come back and beat them or anything. But all of a sudden, after that, CSU went really conservative, punted from, fourth and one inside their own 25 a couple times when, I certainly didn't see benefit from punting. Worst thing that happens is you go for on fourth and fail, but, so what? You're down 3 or 4 touchdowns. So, yeah, I think things like that were concerning to fans. Just kind of basically CSU kind of got outcoached in every phase yesterday.
Well, our Power to Play Sports poll question is up, Kevin. And, okay, with 4 games remaining, after seeing that from the Boise State game, UNLV at home, you're at Air Force, which, the way things are going with Air Force, I don't know what's going to happen there, at San Diego State, then home against Utah State. Do you see the Rams, realistically, how many wins do you see this team pulling off in the next 4?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. Unfortunately, I think you're spot on that 4 is probably a very optimistic number of games to even play. But let's just say they're all going to happen and do that. CSU should beat UNLV. UNLV, somewhat similar situation. New coaching staff, but the roster isn't very good, to be frank. At San Diego State, I think, is a very tough one. I would not expect CSU to win that. Utah State is, frankly, a total disaster, so CSU should win that one. So kind of the Air Force game is sort of a swing game because they're really hard to read right now. Honestly, I would call that a toss-up right now with both the issues both those teams have had. Like you say, I'm not even sure that game's going to happen, but let's hope it does. But I think Utah State, UNLV, very winnable. San Diego State, probably hard to see a win. And so Air Force is one. If you win that and go 3-1 over the Final Four, you'd be feeling fairly good.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I mean, that's optimistic for sure. If they find a way to beat UNLV, and you make a weird season, new coach, new situations, losing Warren Jackson, obviously those kind of things. I think Rams would take that, especially after the night Rams fans had last night. Kevin, appreciate you, man. I know you're driving now, but when you get back, we'll be looking out for you in the Colorado and on Twitter and see what you're putting together for us.
Thanks so much for having me, Brady.
All right, man. Be careful.
Appreciate it.
All right, that's Kevin Lytle, Fort Collins, Colorado. Tough game. Whew, 52-21, Boise State wins this game. And I said 24-13. But I got to say this, man, and I know I got texters that, you said to take the points, man. I said if the Rams complete keys to victory, they win this thing, right? Number one, Ryan Stonehouse has to punt, control the field, Colfax. And judging by the sound of these here, I don't think they controlled the field in their favor.
One of the top punters in the country. They're hoping he doesn't. And it gets blocked! Taken in for the touchdown! Avery Williams!
Avery Williams is a monster. He has seven career special teams touchdowns. I don't know if that was before or after last night, but he blocked two punts. Here's another one.
Now the Rams have another kick blocked and another one returned for a score. It's DJ Schramm on the recovery.
Yeah, and that's not all. There was also the two punts and, of course, a kick.
Robert Liss, their kicker, wears two left cleats. And with that boot that is blocked, he's going to have to track somebody down. This is Canijo, who makes up for the fumble earlier. Another special teams play for the Broncos. Canijo, 90-plus yards to bring this back.
Yikes. That's just awful. There's no other way to look at it. He didn't really have a chance. There was a lot of issues in that game, but really, Colorado State had no prayer. And listen, some things you can take away. Yeah, Dante Wright, stud. Trey McBride, stud. I mean, you're still getting all those things. Like, those guys are, they're just good. And we talked about that being a key to the game, too, that Dante Wright's probably, they're probably going to key in on him. He only had five receptions, but 109 yards on those receptions. He had one long 40-yard reception. Trey McBride, four receptions, 48 yards. He did get a touchdown late in that game. But, yeah, I mean, Scott Patchen, he's kind of a bright spot. You know, another sack for him. So he's been aggressive on the defensive side. But overall, if you're walking away pretty concerned about this team, I can see why. Power to Play Sports poll question of the day. With four games remaining, how many do you think the Rams are going to win? Zero? One, two, three, four. Definitely not going to be four if that's where you're going on that side. I don't think it's going to be zero. I think they could win one game. But the Hooligans are 42% of the Hooligans say one. You got one more win, so that would mean Colorado State walks away with two wins on the season. That would be certainly that would be a rough start to Steve Addazio's career with Colorado State. 22 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a short break. A lot to get to today. We will not have Cody Rourke on. He's our Broncos insider that we feature Friday. But we have Zach Stevens on the program from DNVR Broncos. We talk to him every Monday. We're double dipping with Mr. Stevens today, so we'll talk to him. It's Football Friday. Broncos, Raiders, CU, Stanford. Can the Buffs start the season 2-0? A lot of big football coming up. And again, the other thing is we're watching which games get canceled. It's happening a lot throughout the day today. It's a whole show powered by PDC Energy. We'll be right back.
Catch Inside the Bears Den, presented by Chris Musa Agency Allstate Insurance, Tuesday nights, Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. Dan Patrick, The Hull Show, and Colin Cowherd are on Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Mark Johnson, voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, and you're listening to The Hull Show with my buddy Brady Hull on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back. Welcome back. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. Rough go. Thursday night special was a dud, too. But in fairness, Colfax, I have no control over that. I would have never picked the Titans had it not been because of the whole show curse. So, I mean, can't really blame me for that one.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't even count.
I don't think it really does. I don't think it really counts.
No.
So, I mean, had to pick them because of the whole show curse.
Yep.
And, I mean, can you beat a curse? Nobody can beat a curse.
No.
No, I've never seen it happen in the history of my life. So, Baird-ish can't really blame me there.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I don't blame you at all.
I picked CSU to lose that game last night. I said it was going to be like a defensive game. I mean, you take away those 21 points, though, and it's at least it's not, you know, it's not like as absolute crazy as we saw. You know, you're still seeing 31 points scored by Boise State, but oh boy, yeah, yikes. Scary times for Colorado State, at least today. Now, again, some bright spots for the Rams, and, you know, Dante Wright and Trey McBride are solid. Ajon Vivens is, you know, he had 12 carries for 76 yards, but again, by the time you get to the half, you're kind of throwing out, you're throwing everything out, you know, you're not, it's a lot like the Denver Broncos, but fortunately for Denver, they haven't been down by that much. You know, I mean, what, 42-7 at the half. Rough go. We're going to catch up with Zach Stevens here in just a moment. But Derek Carr, I know we're supposed to hate Derek Carr, but you can't help but like the dude. He goes off. He just starts talking about how great Denver's defense has been in the past. And it was cool to hear a quarterback have that much respect for defense. But listen to these names. It'll just kind of make you a little bit depressed of what we used to have.
I got a lot of stories about playing the Broncos, especially when they had DeMarcus Ware, Yvonne Miller, you know, Malik Jackson, you know, TJ Ward, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris, Bradley Roby. It was like, well, what player are we supposed to run? Which one's going to work? You know, Brandon Marshall, you know, all those guys, Darren Stewart. I got a lot of memories playing these guys. I think one of, probably not my favorite memories, but one of the memories that pops into my mind is, obviously, I've known Vaughn, played against Vaughn now for 7 years, although I won't play him this year. Never forget, one of the first times I played him, I literally caught the snap, and as the ball was coming back to me, Vaughn was even with the football. And I remember catching the ball, taking one step forward. I didn't even take a drop. I took a step forward and he sacked me. And I was just like, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do with that? You know? And it was one of those moments where, you know, you leave that one in the memory banks. You tell your kids about it as he's getting his gold jacket and all that kind of stuff. Also at home when he jumped on me and like literally just took the ball from me. And it happened so fast that I hit the ground and then was like, where's the ball? And he was already up celebrating with it. And I was like, I don't know what you want me to do, coach. I'm sorry. You know, but just some memories of those kind of plays.
Yeah. Depressing. Especially about Vaughn, because it's like, Vaughn, we have still, but we, unfortunately, with the injury, who knows, might see him at the end of the season. Derek Carr, he might not be throwing the ball all over the yard, but he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL. So we'll talk about that. We'll do Broncos Raiders preview coming up. Zach Stevens going to join us coming up next. But first, Colfax, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hear Mornings with Gale, weekdays 6 to 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Football Friday continues here. Zach Stevens joining us. Normally, Zach jumps on with us on a Monday, but we're getting set for the weekend here. It's a pretty big game, obviously, rivalry time, Broncos-Raiders. But if the Broncos want to stay alive in the playoff hunt, however unrealistic that may or may not be, this is a game they need to find a way to win. Zach Stevens joining us from DNVR Broncos. Zach, my friend, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us again twice this week.
Absolutely. Happy to jump on a Friday. Man, got some feel-good vibes today as opposed to jumping on some Monday blues.
Yeah, I do, too. I'm optimistic about this. I know there's a lot of things that need to go right for this offense to get it going, but I guess we'll see how it plays out. Zach, the big story that kind of continues to go, I've been listening to some of Fangio's press conferences. I know that you're in there. You're grilling, coach. You're doing a great job. But the Tom McMahon, Brandon McManus, Vic Fangio, that story's not really going away. It feels like this is kind of another example of maybe Vic as a head coach doesn't have control of all the angles.
Yeah, it seems like we're not getting the full story of what's going on. You know, after the game, Vic said what happened was Tom McMahon told him pretty much to kick it or to not kick a field goal because Brandon wasn't ready for it. Brandon heard that yesterday and said, I was lights out before the game. I was hitting them before the game. I was good from 58. And then Vic asked about it today. Just kind of backs away from the question. And so, you know, who wasn't comfortable with that? It seems like it was Tom McMahon who passed that message on to Vic Fangio, and Brandon McManus wasn't happy that that message was passed on to Vic Fangio.
So, I mean, Zach, wouldn't it have been, first off, you go back to the decision, and I can see that. You concede to your special teams coach, but, I mean, as a head coach, you know what Brandon McManus can do. Like, you've seen him do it before. That decision kind of bothers me, and then the fact that he kind of mentioned what was McMahon's decision. And then you hear McManus come back out and say, no, I could have absolutely drilled it. I was looking good in practice, so I don't know what he's basing that off of. It's just another one of these weird situations. It just doesn't feel like there's control.
Well, and then another weird part of that situation, when McManus spoke out about it on Twitter yesterday, I think he put a hashtag on there that was don't silence the players, which Vic was asked about today and didn't comment on at all. And that's just bizarre. You know, whatever that means, is bizarre in this situation. It just adds a whole nother layer of confusion to what's going on.
Yeah, such a weird thing. So, I mean, I get, you know, you just had the press conference. Are we good with those guys? Or McManus is a big part to this team. I mean, he's a rep for this team, too. So it's not just a kicker and a great kicker. I suppose we should have reason to believe things aren't good between the three of them.
Yeah, one of the things that Vic said and said while laughing was, Brandon typically never has a problem telling me what he's thinking and what's going on. But Brandon hasn't talked to him about that this week. So you would think that in Vic's mind that this is not a big deal and it's completely over. But Brandon, obviously, you know, what is it, 5 days after, he was still talking about it on Twitter.
Yeah, clearly. I kind of put it out of my brain. I was like, well, that sucked. And you talked about it Monday and Tuesday, and then you keep hearing about it. It's absolutely nuts. But bigger issues, too, outside of just the kicking. You know, this Broncos team starting to get healthy. That's the first thing, right? But Shelby Harris, unfortunately, not going to be a go this weekend.
Yeah, Shelby will not be a go. After alerting the Broncos that he was a close contact with someone that tested positive for COVID last week, the team decided to not have him travel to Atlanta, and that was turned out to be a really good decision, because this week he comes out and does test positive for COVID. So he's out this week, could be out the following week as well. And it's a huge blow for the Broncos, because now the Broncos, for a second straight week, will not have their entire starting defensive line. And this week, unfortunately, it's even more impactful than it was last week, because the Raiders love to run the ball. They love to turn around and hand it off to Josh Jacobs. Every single game the Raiders have won, Josh Jacobs has had 20 carries or more. So that's going to happen again this week, I would imagine. They're going to feel very comfortable. And on the opposite side of the ball, the Broncos could be down to their fifth string right tackle, which is just crazy.
Wow.
To think about. Of course, if you include Juwan James in that conversation, who opted out before the season. But going into the season, you had Juwan James, number one. You had Elijah Wilkinson, number two. He's still on the injured reserve. Number three, DeMar Dotson. Right now, he's dealing with an injury. May be able to play, but it's not trending in the right direction for him. Jake Rogers is your fourth string guy. He missed practice yesterday, and he may not play. So Calvin Anderson could be getting his first career NFL start this coming week.
Wow, Zach, they're probably going to ask you to play right tackle next week if it keeps going like this.
Hey, I mean, I'm paying attention in case when I'm out of practice watching.
Doing some film study, I like it. So obviously the right tackle situation, my goodness, I don't know how you recover, as you mentioned it, on the fifth guy now. But at least some good news. You know, you're hearing names, A.J. Boye, Bryce Callahan, huge losses last week. Getting those guys back, and then, you know, Noah Fant, the tight end situation is terrifying. But, you know, Noah Fant keeps getting healthier and healthier. So you're getting more guys back, not just back, but also guys that have been banged up playing. They're feeling better.
Yeah, you're going to really have to rely on those three guys that you mentioned, Noah Fant, Bryce Callahan, and A.J. Boye, especially with not having Shelby Harris on the defensive line. My game plan against the Raiders this week, if I'm Vic Fangio on the defense, is to sell out to stop the run. And then just rely on your secondary, Justin Simmons, to cover Darren Waller, and Bryce Callahan and A.J. Boye to take care of Nelson Aguilar, Hunter Renfrow, and, of course, Henry Ruggs on the outside. And if those guys beat you, well, they just beat the highest-paid secondary in the NFL, so good for them. But you can't have Josh Jacobs beat you on the ground. And then they'll be two-dimensional if that happens, and that is a formula for defeat if the Oakland Raiders are able to throw the ball and run the ball on you. So, to me, I'm relying on that secondary to hold the Raiders in check. They don't have to shut them down, but they can't allow, you know, eight or three 80-yard touchdowns in this game. If they allow one because the Broncos defense sells out to stop the run, you can live with that. But you can't live with the Raiders just being able to pound the ball on the ground all day.
Zach Stevens joining us from DNVR Broncos, and I love that matchup, too. I'm very intrigued by that Darren Waller versus Justin Simmons, see how that one plays out. On the offensive side of the ball, Looking at your running back situation, I feel like we keep saying it each and every week, Zach, but it's the truth. We still have yet to really see the Gordon Lindsay thing take hold. For the most part, they just haven't been out on the field together at the same time or on the roster. But last week and the week before that, we're getting, you know, you're down early, so you're avoiding the run. The Broncos have talked a lot about committing to that run. Zach, what does that look like? Is it as simple as just saying, well, we're going to add more runs? Or are they scheming like crazy trying to figure out how to better run block throughout the game?
Yeah, I mean, it's all of the above there, Brady. And especially early on, the Broncos cannot just take their foot off the gas when running the ball. Even if they're down 10 points in the first quarter, they can't do that. And that's something that offensive coordinators do all the time. When they get down, they panic. And that you can't do that for this running game. You can't do that to Drew Lock, because that will end very poorly, especially with a fourth or fifth string right tackle in there for the Broncos. So what they have to do is they just have to pound the ball over and over and over again. And Brady, you've only really seen the Broncos have Phillip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon both healthy in one game this year. And regardless of if they've been healthy or not, we have not seen the Phillip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon dynamic that the Broncos wanted this season. Phillip Lindsay has the fifth highest yards per carry from a running back in the NFL at 5.8 yards per carry. He's ran the ball over 10 times in a game once.
Wow.
Has he had more than 10 carries in the game, yet being the fifth best running back in terms of yards per carry. And on the other hand, Phillip Lindsay has really struggled in the pass game. He's really struggled in allowing pressures. I believe his pressure rate is 10% when he's back there to pass protect, which is not good for a running back. And then out of the backfield, he's caught two passes this entire season, and he's dropped two passes. So he has as many drops as he does catches this year, so really struggling. So what I would do if I'm Pat Shurmur is I tip my hand, and I'd be okay with doing that and saying, when Melvin Gordon's out there, it's probably going to be a pass. When Phillip Lindsay's out there, it's probably going to be a run. In an ideal world, you don't want to do that, but you know what? It's not working the way it is right now. Have Phillip Lindsay be in there on running plays and just say, Phillip Lindsay's better than your defense. You probably know a run is coming, but you know what? He's going to get me 6 yards per carry. And then when Melvin Gordon's in there, you're saying, yeah, probably going to be a pass, but you know what? He's better. He's going to be able to slow down your rushers, and he's going to be able to catch balls out of the backfield. So that's what I would do. And play to your strengths, because that seems to make sense.
Yeah, Lindsay, overall, and again, everything that you just pointed out makes perfect sense as to why they've shied away a little bit from you know, giving him way more carries and having him more involved. But the last 2 years collectively, he's been the most consistent. So I know Broncos fans wanting to see Phillip Lindsay with a big production type game coming. Even that game against the Chargers, he still only had a few carries. He just busted a long one there. So the numbers are a bit deceiving. All right, the other storyline, Zach, we've got kickers, we got fifth string right tackles, we got running backs. Oh, by the way, Drew Lock continues to be the theme of the Broncos. What can we expect from him? He's saying all the right things to you guys. He's saying, hey, I got to get it right. I got to take it slower. I got to look for my, I got to go through my progressions. But at the end of the day, Broncos country's not going to be happy until they see it on the field.
Yeah, and what needs to happen from Drew is consistency. Like we've talked about, he's been great these past two fourth quarters. He's put up 21 points in each of those two fourth quarters. However, the other 18 quarters he's played this season, he's averaging 3.5 points per quarter, which is equivalent to about 14 points per game, which is second worst in the NFL, only to the New York Jets. So we need to see somewhere in between. He does not need to be Mr. Fantastic in the first, second, third, and fourth quarter. He just needs to be good and average, and that would be good. That would be a step in the right direction, because you can't play great in the NFL 10% of the time and then really below average, significantly below average, the other 90%. What we need to see him do is play good 80% of the time, great 10% of the time, and he can be bad 10% of the time, because quarterbacks are going to make mistakes, especially young ones. So this is going to start with that running game. It's going to start by taking some pressure off Drew and then setting him up for easy passes and get him on the move. He so clearly wants to be on the move, and you see it so much, in fact, that he goes on the move even when he's not supposed to. And in those situations, he's throwing up his back foot. As Pat Shurmur said yesterday, he resorts back to his basketball days where he's shooting fadeaways, And you can't have that. So what you need to do is just put him in good situations. So it's something that we've been preaching for a long time and still really haven't seen it. But Rich Scangarello's offense seemed to work with Drew Locke last year when he was on the move. So that's what I would do at the start of the game.
Very interesting on that side of it. One more for you, Zach. Looking at a guy like Derek Carr, he's not like throwing it all over the place and having, you know, monster numbers each and every week, but he's very efficient. And I think that to me is a key stat to look at because, you know, and again, especially if you have a good rushing attack, all you need to do is really not turn it over and just be effective when you need to be. And that seems to be what Derek Carr is doing this season.
Derek Carr has been the perfect quarterback for the Raiders this year. When they need him to manage a game, that's exactly what he does. He does not make mistakes. When they need him to take over a game, that's what he does, and he's capable of doing that. That's how the Raiders went into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs and put up 40 points on the Chiefs to hand them their only loss this year. Derek Carr threw over 70% completion, 350 yards, 3 touchdowns, had a passer rating of 127 in that game, just absolutely incredible. But then you look at a lot of the other games he's had, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 1 touchdown, no pick. He's thrown for 111 yards 2 weeks ago to beat the Browns 16-6. Last week he threw for 165 yards, but the Raiders still put up 31 points. He is Mr. Efficient, 16 touchdowns to only 2 interceptions this year, so he is not going to lose the game for the Raiders. That's why you have to take away the part that will win the game for the Raiders, and that's the rushing attack. But you can't count on Derek Carr making silly mistakes because he's just simply not going to do that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Zach, appreciate you, man. I know you're putting together pregame stuff for us throughout the weekend. But again, throw out where folks can find you, Twitter, and of course, they can always subscribe today to DNVR.
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm on Twitter at Zach Stevens DNVR. And Brady, I really appreciate being on and love being on twice a week with you, man.
Yeah, we love look forward to it each and every week here, and you lay it out so perfectly for us. Do you have a prediction for us?
I do. Man, I'll tell you what, I loved this game for the Broncos at the beginning of the week, not just to cover the 4-point spread that they're facing this week, but to win the game straight up. But yesterday and the past few days when the news of Shelby Harris coming out and the news of DeMar Dotson not looking good for this game, man, I can't pick the Broncos to win. I can't pick them to cover the spread either. I'm going 31-26 Raiders. The Raiders hit that magic number of 31 points. They've won every game when they've put up over 30 points this year. In 4 of their 5 wins, they've dropped over 30. So I think it happens again against a defense that they're going to be able to run against. And I think the offense picks up a little earlier in this game, but still, they just struggle when they need to come up the most, and so they fall just short again.
There's only so much next man up you can say before it really affects the roster. Zach, appreciate you, my man. Enjoy the game. Have a great weekend.
All right, right on, Brady. Look forward to talking to you after the game.
All right, man. That's Zach Stevens, DNVR Broncos. Great guy, great reporter. 51 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break here. I'll wrap up hour number one. Still got to talk CU and Stanford. Can the Buffs go 2-0? Buffs are going in action again this weekend. I believe we're going to get Carl Durrell on the program next week, head coach for the Buffaloes. So this is a whole show powered by PDC Energy. We cover it all here, man. And we're just getting started.
You're listening to The Hall Show, powered by PDC Energy and 1310 KFKA. Brady will be back after the break. It's a party in Northern Colorado's voice. 1310 KFKA. The Block Party, Wednesdays from 4 to 10 p.m.
Hey, it's Dan Patrick. You're listening to my pal, Brady Hall. Check out The Hall Show on Northern Colorado's football station, 1310 KFKA.
Four minutes until the top of the hour. Broncos Raiders week. Can the I think it's an important game. Our guy though, Zach Stevens, I think, you know, the injuries just piling up for Denver, and it's hard to overcome that. Shelby Harris is gonna be a huge miss in this game. Especially when you have a team that can run. Sylvester Williams talking about Purcell and Shelby Harris and how, you know, these guys are some of the best defensive linemen. You don't hear a lot about guys like Purcell, and being without him, being without Shelby Harris, it's a tough go. And so when do you stop saying, oh, next man up? Because it doesn't always work, especially if you're on your fifth right tackle. Most teams don't even carry more than like three right tackles, but you're in a case where you're on your fifth. So I don't know, man. It's going to be a difficult task for sure. But losing guys, like I said, on the defensive side without Shelby Harris in this game, and then you've been without Mike Purcell, tough situations for this Broncos team. All right, second hour. Football Friday continues. We ramp it up a notch coming up in the second hour. CU taking on Stanford this week as well. More recap and afterthoughts of CSU Boise State. That was bad. And, well, Broncos Raiders. What do the Broncos have to do to win this thing? We'll be right back.